Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham. Joining me this evening, Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hola.
How's it going?
Yes, wonderful.
Good.
Without Jay Cross this evening, he's off doing something, I don't know.
It's his sister's birthday.
Oh yeah, that's it, yeah. That's how much dedication he's got to this podcast. His sister's birthday. Let that sink in. How's it going, Matt Knight?
I am good, thank you very much. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Joining us again via the power of the internet, so, you know, do bear with us. Next week, I think we're all going to be in the same room.
Are we?
Yes.
Yeah,
we're going to podcast on Sunday.
Yeah, we're going to have a breakfast and do a podcast.
Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah.
The old gang's back together again.
It's kind of weird doing it with no visuals, because we're not doing it over camera, just Skype audio.
Yeah, it's nice. It's like having a 2 hour long phone conversation with you.
Yeah. I like it. Back in the day.
How's everything been this week? Joe, you've been in the studio. How was that? Some ridiculous pictures of your guitarist's setup.
It was really good. Yeah, yeah. We had 5 days in Brighton Electric Studios, which were 5 very long days, recording our new very, very proggy record. So we had some really interesting gear, yeah, for the whole thing.
So for people who don't know, you're in a band called Polymath.
Yes.
Who are sort of like prog math rock?
We were like a math band, and then we were a prog math band, and now it's definitely just a prog.
Straight up Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Well, I told you shortly before we did this podcast, but we the record we recorded is coming just under 45 minutes, and there are 3 songs on it, so yes, it's
can you remember how really to play them? Seriously, live, can you remember how to play them?
Yeah, we have to. I mean, some of it's improvised a little.
So your sets from now on, your live sets, are you just going to play 3 songs?
Well, no, we'll do like...
Oh, you got to play the old classics.
We'll do like radio edits.
Right.
Where they're like shorter and snappier, okay. So we can fit a few more in.
7-inch version.
Yeah, exactly that.
You were a math band, you're now a prog band. I'm not going to pretend to understand the difference.
Right.
Prog's a bit more like hippie-ish and that, isn't it?
It's not more hippie-ish, more like...
theatrical?
Just less snappy.
Okay, so less...
That's the only way I
less rock.
Yeah,
and more...
sort of more like lots of weird stuff. Like we had some Mellotron on there.
I saw that.
Played through... a Mellotron app that we downloaded on an iPhone because we couldn't get a Mellotron.
Of course.
But yeah, we had a Mellotron app running through a Boss Slicer.
There we go. We talked about it last week.
Best pedal.
You weren't here, were you?
I wasn't here.
We were talking about
week.
Underrated pedals, and we're talking about how good the Boss Slicer is.
Do you know, we were borrowing one. It was our producer who brought in the slicer, and it was the first thing our guitarist did getting out of the studio was to find a secondhand slicer.
They're amazing.
They are absolutely brilliant. Brilliant, but I mean, my guitarist pedal board was 22 pedals strong for the recording, which was quite ridiculous. Which I have a question about, which I will come to later in the podcast. But that was good. And we had 6 heads. We were using a what was it called? What's the Roadhouse 30? What's the company that do those?
Cornford.
Cornford, yes. We had a Cornford Roadhouse 30. There was a Hiwatt High Gain 50, which we always use. Matt, your old hovercraft Dwarvenaut 20 was on it. An Orange Rocker 30. A Selmer treble and bass 50.
Okay, nice.
And a Vox Night Train 50.
That was the thing that I was a little confused about.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that one there.
All the others are big, powerful tube amps, you know, 50 watts and above-ish.
Yeah.
What was the Night Train doing?
The Night Train we use predominantly as our drive amp, one of the drive amps. And we actually broke the Hiwatt halfway through, so
we had to
swap that out, and the two drive amps became the Roadhouse and the Night Train. The Night Train probably ended up being the second most used amp on the record, which I was really surprised about. We bought that on tour for £190 when my band were on tour, and Tim's Rocker 30 broke. Orange were getting a new one out to us, but it was going to be a day, and we had a gig that day. So we went on Gumtree and found someone in the local area selling a Vox Night Train 50 for £190, and we went and bought that on our way to our next show.
I love that you spent £190 to cover you for one gig.
Yeah, but, you know, we
you're getting your money's worth now, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, well, exactly. And so we... yeah, and it was absolutely brilliant. What a massively underrated amp. It's kind of like all Mesa Boogie-ness for a fraction of the price.
Yeah, I've not really used one. Matt, that's kind of what they're going for, isn't it? They're going for that sort of boogie, you know, kind of does loads of sounds, big American drive sounds on there.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, really, because, you know, thinking of, like, Vox's heritage, it was quite a weird thing, especially when they did the 15, because I'm assuming they kind of were going for, like, oh, we need to make a lunchbox amp. But, yeah, they actually sound really good. The drive channel on the 50 is much nicer, I think, than the drive channel on the 15, just because you've got a little bit more sort of headroom and a little bit more openness.
Yeah, it was it was absolutely brilliant. I was incredibly surprised that when being used alongside all those kind of big names, that it ended up being kind of the main drive amp for the record, and the hovercraft ended up being the main clean amp. That kind of, we kind of ran out of gain.
Should be the other way around.
I know, you would have thought, but
I guess yeah. Well, you've got too much headroom, I guess, just too loud, basically.
What?
On the hovercraft?
No, the hovercraft's only 20 watts.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It was just, it wasn't, you know.
Just the way around it was working. I guess quite easy to get into the way the Night Train's probably set up. I assume it had just an input gain control, so you could actually just push it without having it up super loud.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But yeah, it was wicked.
What'd you do for bass?
For bass, we were using two things. We went and picked up an Ampeg B15 Portaflex.
Nice.
And a 60s one, an early 60s one.
Okay.
Which, again, brings me on to this side thing that I want to talk about, but I'll leave it on this. I'll tell you the story of how we got that is an important thing for all listeners to know about, but I'll come on to that in a bit. So we were using an Ampeg B15, the ultimate recording amp. Unfortunately, it was a 60s one that hadn't been used for a while.
How many songs did it last for?
None, because I didn't want to use it, because I sort of powered it up and it sounded great. There was some problem with the integrity of the cabinet, so there was something rattling, so I ended up extensioning cabbing out. But then I was thinking, well, if that's the case and it hasn't been used for a while, I need this to be on for 2 days.
Yeah.
It's going to go, and I'm going to have two songs sounding one way, one song sounding another. So so in the end, I used a Fender Bassman 135.
Got
all of them.
Because you talked about before that you were using one of those for something or other.
Yeah, that's right. I've been using it in rehearsal for a few weeks. I love that amp so much. And I use the cab that they've got with it. It's the old Silverface of the 60s ones rather than the 70s Bassman. And they've got the 215 matching cab in Brighton Electric Studios as well. So I used that, and it was absolutely brilliant. Pretty much my whole sound for the entire record was that. And then I used the Boss bass driver.
Okay.
As my drive sound.
Getting its first outing.
Yeah, and I mean, bear in mind, I have a Sans amp bass driver, the VT version, the Ampex.
Yep.
And a host of other drive pedals, like the bass tube screamer, the T-Rex bass juice. Like I've got loads of drive pedals, the Big Muff, obviously. And we ended up settling on the Boss bass driver, so I thought it sounded absolutely brilliant. I was using it along with an octave pedal that I bought off of Matt, an old a 1984 Boss OC2.
Glitchy.
Yeah, it was wicked.
I bet. Cool. And what you were showing me something about how you were miking up the bass cab was very, very proggy.
Yeah, so we used, well, obviously it's a 215 cab, so one of the 15-inch speakers, we used a really good FET mic, and on the other we used a Subkick, which is a kick drum microphone that looks like a snare drum.
Yeah, they're weird, those.
Yeah.
I've seen quite a few people use them for recording drums, but never for the bass.
No, I mean, it was just for the drive of it, just because it was so unruly and ridiculous, because it wasn't really designed to capture frequencies as high as a bass guitar, so it was really struggling.
Okay.
Which sounded great. But
how to break stuff in a nice way.
Yeah, exactly. But we had some great stuff. Guitars were really interesting as well, so we did everything on my bass, and then all the bass lines got doubled up with a bass 6 as well.
Of course.
The guitarist used the bass 6 as well for some lead parts going through a Blues Junior, so that it was really, really weird. And
it's a proper gearhead's record, isn't it?
Yeah,
like you've used everything.
We used like a Dan Electro.
No songs. It's just a podcast where they talk about this stuff.
That's basically it.
You're listening to the album right now.
This is it. We used a Dan Electro 12 string, one of the DC-59 12 strings in places, and then a Gibson SG, a couple of Telecasters, and an old 60s Burns Vista Sonic.
Okay.
My guitarist is left-handed, but fortunately he plays upside-down strung, so his 12-string Dan Electro and his SG are right-handed models.
So he can basically play anything.
Yeah, exactly. He's just he hasn't even converted them. He just puts loads of tape over the controls.
Okay.
So sets them where he wants them and then tapes it all up. But yeah.
Cool. Good stuff. When's it coming out?
Well, I don't think our producer is... We work with the guys from And So I Watch You From Afar, who are like a big instrumental Irish band, and they will now be off doing that sort of stuff.
Mixing and stuff.
Well, we're going to go over for the mix. We're going to go over to Belfast for it, but we'll wait until September.
So, oh, wow. Yeah, so. That's a long time to wait. Matt Knight, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
I haven't done anything as exciting as record a record. I've literally been spending all of my time looking at the NAMM stuff. Working in a music shop, you kind of have to stay one step ahead of everyone that's going to and bound to ask you loads of questions. So I've mainly been doing that and just awaiting my Boss ES8, which I think will hopefully arrive at some time at the end of the month.
You were saying earlier you've been having a bit of a struggle with some valves as well.
Yeah, one of my amps, it is a Princeton, but it should have much more clean headroom, and it just seems to be breaking up a bit too early. And the annoying thing is, I think I need to put some new power amp valves in it, but I don't have any spares, which is really, really annoying, because I'm sure that's the reason, and I just want to know now, and I can't be bothered to wait.
Always a pricey thing to do as well, particularly if you don't know if it's going to fix the problem. Like getting power amp valves is costly.
Yeah, and actually, I was just having a look at some valves, and I was thinking, oh, you know, like what sort of preamp valves can you get, power amp valves, and you can spend up to like £100 on some like 6V6s for a matched pair. I mean, that seems like a crazy amount. I'm always a bit wary of spending loads of money on valves, because sometimes I don't know how much difference it's ever going to make. Because you can never compare them. You can never A-B them, and that's always the biggest thing, isn't it?
It's like pickups, isn't it? Like, you can't really tell what they're going to sound like until you've put them in. And particularly in the case of pickups, like, you can't really return them.
Yeah, exactly. You can't really like put some valves in, blast them for half an hour, and then go, I want to try the other ones. But yeah, like I say, yeah, with pickups, you can't have three different humbuckers in all in the same position and go, oh, I like the sound of this one more than that one. It's it's really tricky. So
have you got access?
I've always been like, maybe I should just spend less.
Have you got access to an orange valve tester so you can test the ones that are in there at the moment, see whether they're actually faulty?
No, and I think the thing about the orange valve tester is I'm not sure if it does 6V6s.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember, because there's some... It doesn't do any rectifier valves, and I can't remember if it does 6V6s or not. Maybe I'll have to try and get my hands on one and see if... and have a look and see.
Plug them in and just see whether it's a faulty valve or whether it's just you don't like how they sound.
Yeah, because it could be that they're not faulty, they're just kind of...
You just don't like them.
You can get some that have slightly better headroom than others, so we'll have to see.
Yeah. I've been up to two things this week. Firstly, the computer that we use for the podcast, I completely took apart. And talking about, like, testing things, and Matt, you were saying that when you're taking these valves out and stuff, like, you've got to be super careful. I'll tell you what is scary, taking the back off a MacBook Pro and looking at the inside and going, I don't know what any of this stuff does, but I'm about to take half of it out and put some other stuff in.
Oh, God.
It was...
Well, it seems to have worked. The computer's still on.
The computer is absolutely bloody amazing at the moment. It, I removed the CD drive completely.
Right.
And put in a solid state hard drive, and put in another hard drive, a bit more RAM. It's like a whole little project.
Oh, that's
what
nice.
What Mac you got?
I've got a 2010 MacBook Pro, so like the one of the last ones that you can actually upgrade. So yeah, it was like £180, and it brings it up nearly into line with the stuff that they sell for like £1,500 now.
Oh, right. So, I might try that. I've got a fairly old MacBook Pro.
Yeah, just pop stuff in it. It's it's great. But it was daunting. It was like, you know how, like, with guitar stuff, generally, unless you actually really dig into the amp, you can't go that far wrong. Like, when you're setting up a pedal board and stuff, as long as you've got a 9-volt power supply, you just plug stuff in. Or, you know, when you're changing valves, generally you can't go that far wrong as long as you handle them. Like, this was actually scary. Like, you have to undo connectors and stuff that I've never seen before. And
thank you.
It took me, like... 3 hours. It took like 27 hours to copy my hard drive over. But then, yeah, it was about a 30-hour job all round. So, yeah, it was good. Really good. The other thing, I went to a wedding at the weekend and saw the first wedding band that I've actually enjoyed.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I just realised on the email I put Mark saw an actually good weeding band.
Yes, you did. I was really confused.
Bit of a weeding. They were really good. So the guitar player, they were doing like post punk stuff and like rockabilly and stuff like that.
Oh, that's why you thought it was good.
Yeah, yeah, because they were actually doing, you know, the late 70s and 80s hits. But the revelation for me was, firstly, the guy was using two different custom shop tellies and a Gretsch for the more rockabilly stuff. Revelation for me was Marshall AVT-50.
Never.
Always a good amp. Like, if you drive the front end of the AVT-50...
What's the AVT-50?
So good. So, they were the post-valve state valve states.
Oh, no.
Generally considered to be utter rubbish.
Definitely.
They had some built-in DFX and stuff like that.
Oh, God.
But the 50... sounds wicked.
No.
It is, honestly.
No,
the 50 is a gem. And they did... it's just like a little 112 combo, 50 watts, no digital effects, apart from reverb. There might even be a spring reverb in there. But they always sounded pretty good. And, yeah, he sounded wicked at the weekend. Like, these custom shop tellies just sounded amazing.
What a waste of a pair of custom shop tellies.
Honestly, but the thing is...
Why didn't he just buy one custom shop and then buy a decent amp?
But the thing is, you go back to the PV Bandit... It's like, if you're just doing wedding gigs and you want something that you can sling in and out of a van on Friday, Saturday and Sunday nights, then why not get something solid state?
Yeah, fine, I understand that. I mean, especially with a wedding gig where, you know, there's a lot riding on your shoulders as a band there, it would be nice to not have the risk of gear failure.
Totally. And, you know, everyone's a bit boozed up. No one's going to be like, oh, lovely little whatever amp you've got there.
Well,
lovely.
You should get a Crush Pro. An Orange Crest.
Well,
Pro.
That's true, but I mean, he's obviously had this for a while because they've been discontinued for probably 10 to 15 years.
Right, so.
Probably 10 years. But it sounded wicked. Really, really, really good. They were awesome. My first experience of a wedding band who were actually good. So
that's good. That is a rarity, I agree. You normally get such predictable sort of songs. I used to be in a Motown wedding band.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. It's nice when wedding bands have an edge, when they don't just play.
I think you two have both done some wedding band stuff. Matt, didn't you do a bit of wedding band?
Yeah, I did a covers band for a while, like a seven-piece band with a sound guy as well. Yeah, it was good fun. But that's the thing, like you say, you can take loads of gear and loads of cool stuff. And
I'm sure someone at the wedding did.
Yeah. But no one really cares. Like you say, you gig with an AVT or like a Crush Pro, it's probably going to sound just as good to everyone listening to it. It's just you're going to be going, oh, I wish I was plugged into my really, really expensive amp with my really, really expensive guitar.
The other thing about the AVTs, though, emulated line out, so straight into the PA. No, don't need to mic it up.
No, that's not cool.
Yeah,
what PA were they going into?
I can't remember. It was like Mackie's or something. Definitely a Mackie sub. I can't really remember the tops. I'd had a few gins.
I did, actually, when I was in a wedding band, I did used to use a Boss ME 50B for everything. That was like my effects board for wedding stuff.
I quite fancy doing a wedding band. I quite fancy doing like a... Because everyone our age now, like late 20s to mid 30s, is getting married. And like, I just want to do the hits of like the late 90s / early 2000s.
Oh, God, your wedding band would be
Blink-182, Sum 41.
182.
Yeah, Blink-182.
Yeah.
Sum 41. I think that'd be all right. Like alternative pop punk wedding bands.
Aren't Sum 41 back?
He did a gig. Yeah, that only him though.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, only him. After his stint in the rehab. Anyway, let's Matt, you talked about some news, some Summer NAMM news. It's been Summer NAMM this week, so let's talk about some news.
Nudes.
I've tried to put these roughly in the order of thing that I kind of heard them, the order they were released. So a couple days before, Boss and Roland made a big announcement. Boss DD500 and RV6 first up. Matt, what do you make of these?
Amazing. Like the DD500, I think the price of those is going to be like £260.
Yeah.
It means that they'll be massively undercutting Strymon whilst offering a very, very similar piece of gear.
It's amazing, really, because it kind of looks like they are really taking on board what people have been saying. They're kind of really looking at what's out there, and they're actually generally kind of going for the competition. They're not just going, oh, we make Boss pedals, and Boss pedals look like this. And because, you know, it's got to be the first Boss-like foot pedal that doesn't look like a normal single or double stomp box.
Yeah. Only the first effects pedal they've done, so not counting the ES8, that's got actual switches, like regular style switches.
Yeah, so I'm assuming, obviously, you know, Roland's renowned for their sort of reliability. I wonder what they're doing, if they've done something different with these foot switches. It wouldn't surprise me if they kind of designed a new switch or something.
I think that might be correct, because when you think, like, you know, Electro-Harmonix are kind of notoriously bad for their switches. They use a similar design, like the standard effects switch, and they tend to go down quite a lot, whereas Boss stuff doesn't. So yeah, maybe, or it might be like a soft switch, like the TC Electronic stuff. Like it might not be a hard kind of click.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's the same switch they've put on the ES8, because the ES8 is like multifunctional, and I think, if I remember rightly, seeing on the DD500, like you can change the foot switches to do different things per patch as well, or you can set them up to do like loads of different controls rather than just like up and down bank or like change effects. I think they'd like tap tempo, and you can add other effects in using the foot switches and stuff like that as well.
So for people who haven't read up on it, what does the DD500 actually do? What's in the box?
So digital delay, but what they're going for is, obviously you've got analog modes, tape and everything like that, but what they're doing is adding in all of their sort of heritage of digital like rack effects. Which seems to be the kind of really popular thing at the moment. I think a lot of people who have been using old rack digital delays for years and years, who now don't want to carry around like a huge rack setup, are going for these sort of digital delays. And yeah, that's what you've got. 12 delay models, nice big graphic screen. So I think it's going to be one of the only delay pedals out there with a full LCD screen.
Is it like a colour screen? Because I've only seen it in black and white.
No, it's not colour. I think it's like blue and white. So I think it's the same screen as the ES8.
Okay.
But you can have like full text on there rather than just kind of like that kind of like LED ones that you get on like the Strymon.
Sure.
Full MIDI control, looper, USB, so you're going to be able to use the USB into the Tone, like the Tone Central app that they've got, so you're going to be able to edit all the delay all the delays on your computer. Buffered or true bypass as well, which is also another big thing. The fact that they've gone, actually, you know what, people want true bypass, let's put it on our unit.
Is that the first Boss to offer true bypass?
Yeah, I think so. I think everything has been buffered, and I think that's why loads of people, you know, in the kind of the rise of the boutique have been put off by it, because they're always like, oh, I wouldn't go for a Boss because it's got buffered and I need to have true bypass. So I think they've gone, well, actually, you know what, if you want the buffer, you want the Boss buffer, it's there. If you don't, you can switch into true bypass mode.
It's pretty amazing what Boss have been doing over the last 18 months or so, kind of just disregarding years of history and going, okay, no, we're going to put a regular switch in there. Oh, we're going to lose the buffer on this one if people want it. We're going to, you know, debut some completely different designs. DD500 seems to be the kind of the way they're going, really. They're taking on the new boys, taking on Strymon, and just saying, look, we're Boss, we've been doing this for years, get off our lawn.
It's almost going to be like it's going to be the biggest thing since the Strymon timeline, I think.
Just for so much less money, it's exactly what obviously they did with the ES8, sort of knocking.
They've looked
Voodoo
at the most
Labs.
Popular yeah. thing and gone, not Voodoo Labs, Gigrig.
Gigrig, sorry, yeah.
They've looked at the most popular one and gone, yeah, I think we can do that better, cheaper, just to prove, you know, we're the boys. And what about the RV6? Is just a revision on the RV5, or is there some brand new stuff in there?
I've got a feeling they're kind of going for a whole new sort of vibe on it, really, and because I think all that I mean, the RV5 got to be what, 10, 12 years old now?
Oh, it's quite maybe old, more than that. I don't remember there being, what was the reverb before?
3.
I don't remember that at all, so it could be like 15 years for the RV5.
Yeah. I mean, it looks amazing, and I think the great thing is once again they've looked at what's popular and added things like shimmer mode, you know. You've still got spring plate, modulate, room, but also dynamic delay as well, which is really nice. So it's
dynamic reverb, you mean?
Sorry, yeah, dynamic reverb. So like ducking delay, I think as you hit it, you get less reverb, and then as your note dies out, the kind of reverb fades in.
So it's like swells back in, basically.
Yeah, and I think because now they've been able to kind of redesign it, new algorithms, better processors, it is just going to sound better. I think the thing is the RV5 is just starting, or you know, for a little while it sounded a little bit dated, and I think this is just going to sound so much better.
Yeah, I'm surprised the RV5's kind of stuck around as long as it has, because even when things like the Electronics Holy Grail started to come out, people just weren't looking at RV5s anymore, because there's such a much more organic sounding reverb. And then obviously TC Hall of Fame has just kind of come out and obliterated it. Really surprised that the 5 stuck around as long as it has. And the 6 so far looks like it's getting quite a good reception. People seem to be into it.
I think that's the thing. Like you say, Hall of Fame and, you know, TC and Strymon have kind of dominated effects pedals for sort of 4 or 5 years now. And I think Boss have kind of just been gathering all the information, and now they're going to start releasing loads of products that I think are going to be similar in kind of, you know, because they're trying to go for the competition, but I think they're going to have their own sort of take on things as well. I'm really looking forward to kind of plugging it in. That and the DD500 is going to be awesome.
Yeah, DD500 I think is going to be a huge seller. As long as it sounds good, and in early demo videos it seems like it does. So I think Strymon need to up their game again. I was going to say one other thing from the Boss Roland camp, and Matt, I know you're very excited about this, the JC40 new jazz chorus, 40 watts. What's the lowdown?
Amazing. Well, basically, I was watching some information on it earlier. So it's the 40th anniversary of the Roland Jazz Chorus. And a little bit of information I picked up today is the original Jazz Chorus was the first amp ever. In fact, one of the first products ever to have chorus in it and distortion.
I mean, no one ever uses the distortion on the JC120, so...
I think that's the thing, is basically what they were saying was that, you know, no one had ever really put distortion in an amp, so most people, when they turned on the JC120, were like, yeah, that sounds pretty terrible, but, you know, distortion was, you know, not a thing. It hadn't had time to kind of develop into what it is now, so it's same circuitry, same...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Same chorus as the original, redesigned distortion circuit. So actually, I think they've not kind of pulled one of the boss pedals. They've actually designed a half decent valve sounding overdrive circuit for it, and stereo input as well. So you can have obviously mono for a guitar or bass, but you can also plug in keyboards with a TRS cable, so you get true stereo in those two speakers. And they're going to be, I think, £500.
How much is a 120? They're about £1,200 or something, aren't they? Or they go over £1,000?
Yeah, about £1,000.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan that visually they haven't redesigned them at all.
It's just the same.
It's got to be the closest thing to a Boss reissue that we've ever had.
Kind of. Well, I mean, apart from because it looks was a craft and the,
yeah, which they sort of got around.
Yeah, well, they put an X on some of them and a W on the other ones. But I know what you mean. They've kept the kind of aesthetic, really. Because they've never done a 40 before, have they? Didn't they do a 50 combo?
Yeah, don't you have one, Matt?
No, I've got a 50, which I was plugging into today, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. I mean, it is funny, because what I was going to say was is that you can actually, although they're harder to find, obviously you can pick up older ones for fairly cheap. But I think the fact that they're kind of, there's a few performance-enhancing kind of adjustments they've done on this that I think are going to make it, I think it's really going to bring it back into the forefront for people, because obviously we know so many people use JC120s, but every time someone plugs one in, they're like, yeah, it sounds amazing, but I'm literally never going to be able to carry this around.
No.
I'm really looking forward to trying it out. But as you say, I don't think, did they do a 40? They did a 20 and a 20E. A 50, a 55, a 70, a 77, a 120, and a 120 head.
What was the 77?
It was stereo, two 12-inch speakers, but it was 70 watts.
Okay.
And then they did a 120, and I think they did a 120 head, and I'm sure they did a 180, which was like four speakers as well.
Really? Like a 410 or something?
No, like a, yeah, either a four, yeah, I think a 410, because all the speakers in those stereo ones are 10s. But I've never seen one in the flesh. I remember one of the Roland guys sent me a picture of a store that he went in, and they had one secondhand, and I was like, sure, it's just got to be unliftable. My 50 weighs more than pretty much any other amp I've ever picked up. I have no idea why. I'm assuming it's to do with the speakers, but...
Concrete.
Yeah. But the great thing about these amps is they're amazing... They're just amazing for stereo. Like, they take pedals really, really well, because they're really, really clean. They don't sound sterile. They sound really warm, really lush. And if you run it in stereo with a valve amp, which is what I'm doing at the moment, they just sound great.
I'm wondering whether the drive channel is going to fall along similar lines as the Blues Cube, maybe. Maybe they're going to like take some of the characteristics from that and put that into the JC.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going for, because the Blues Cube sound really, really good. A lot of people are buying them. A lot of people are starting to use them. And, you know, seeing some of the videos with sort of Eric Johnson using his, I think that's what they're going for. Because they want, basically, I think most people are going to buy a jazz chorus because they want it for the clean. And to have an extra drive on there is just going to probably swing it for a few people.
Definitely. So another pedal that got announced just before the show kicked off, TC Electronics Body Res.
That is probably the worst name for a pedal of all time.
I was thinking that.
What is it?
It's so,
I mean, it sounds like something that I'd go to a tanning salon for.
Yeah, or like a class at the gym.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to go do body res tonight.
I think it's actually, there's a TC Helicon product that has this effect in it, and I think it's called body res in the Helicon product.
There, it's the acoustic multi effects plus vocal thing that I'm completely blanking on the name.
Oh, the voice
live acoustic live. Is that what it's called?
No, I don't know, mate. It's a vocal pedal.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I think that's the name of the preset, basically. So what's the idea behind it, Matt?
It basically is designed to give your guitar sound a little bit more depth and a little bit more warmth when you're using a under-saddle pickup for acoustic. As we all know, if you've ever taken an electro-acoustic with an under-saddle and plugged it straight into a PA, most of the time it sounds bloody horrible. So the idea is that you plug this in, you turn it on. It's kind of like a Make Gooder pedal, but for acoustics, really.
It really is to just
get... But the nice thing is, it's not just...
I was going to say, it really is just to get over the fact that piezo pickups under the bridge sound awful pretty much, yeah, you know, 100% at the time. So, yeah, I think the idea is that you can just blend in. I'm not really sure how they're doing it. I assume it's some just sort of, like, digital effect that's, like, creating, like, artificial resonance, basically.
Well, it's weird because I think, you know, you'd think with just one controller, as you turn it up, it's going to, that effect, you're going to give the, that effect more volume. But I think as you, different points on the actual turn of the control knob do different things.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I think in lower volumes, it gives you a little bit more warmth, a little bit more depth. As you turn it up, it kind of adds some more frequencies in to change it. So you can actually, you've got a usable control right across the board rather than just always turning it up to 10.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't get a chance to check out many demos, actually, of this stuff, just because I've been super busy and stuff this week. So I really want to... I'm kind of curious about the body res, because I think for a lot of people, it will solve quite a lot of problems, even though at first glance, it kind of seems like just a really stupid product, you know, like almost like TC have run out of ideas. But actually, when you think about it a bit more, anyone who's using acoustic live wants a single box to make their under-saddle pickup, yeah, sound better, and this is exactly what that product is.
I think that's the thing. It's not everyone can afford to get, you know, like an 8 series Taylor with an expression system, or you know, like a high-end Martin with a Fishman Aura system. You know, it's for the people out there that have got a cheaper electroacoustic, and you know, as we say, an under-saddle, it's almost like the worst place to put a pickup. It's picking up the brightest part of the guitar string. So I think this is going to be a cheap solution for most people to get a much better sound gigging. Really.
It's just the easiest way of doing it, isn't it? Putting an under-saddle pickup in there, because you don't have to mess around with like a magnetic pickup across the sound hole and all that kind of jazz. It's just really easy, and this solves some of the problems. So next up, Schecter Guitars have announced the Sultan, the PT series, and the Traditional series, or the Trad series, I think it's actually called.
Sultan is the best name for a series.
Yeah.
I mean.
So the Sultan is a Strat, unsurprisingly,
right,
that has... It's basically a throwback to some of their earliest guitars, their earliest custom shop stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Because, again, like ESP, I think, Schecter started off as like a custom shop builder, basically, building like Strats and Tellies and stuff, and eventually got into the metal market. So apparently the Sultan is a kind of throwback to that. So it's a Strat that has three single coils, doesn't have a five-way selector switch, but instead has three-way mini toggles.
Right.
You're right.
It's like the old Fender series.
Yeah, I remember the ones with the little... those little buttons on them, those Elite series things.
Wait, oh, what, the... Sorry?
So I said, just put a 5-way switch on it.
No, I'm all about the mini toggles. I'm all about that. I think so bonkers. And when you see it, because it's only got a volume and a tone as well, so it just looks so sparse, because there's no regular... It's really far from a regular Strat layout, because you've got the three micro switches and then the volume and tone, so... I'm into it, and it's the one that I saw is like red with a maple neck, so it's kind of like Knopfler-esque. Red with a rosewood neck, Knopfler-esque. And they've kind of carried that on in the PT series and the Trad series, PT being Tellies and Trad being Strats. You know, again, going back to their roots, really, of doing kind of Fender-alikes.
Yeah, they've introduced some really...
Two strap buttons, though.
Why has what got two strap buttons? The Sultan...
Just so you got choice.
Yeah.
Where I didn't see that on the photo. Where are the two?
It's actually on the it's on the Schecter website. At the base, it's got two strap buttons. Now I can't tell whether they've maybe photoshopped it incorrectly or whether they've just actually put two strap buttons.
No, it's just so you got choice, mate. That's just how it works.
But straps are adjustable in length.
No, not
balance.
All of them. Not
adjustable
all of them.
Balance.
Is it because are they placed kind of evenly spaced at the bottom, so you can essentially stand the guitar up against a wall without needing a guitar stand?
Perhaps seems like an odd thing, but yeah, it does kind of look cool though. I mean, I must admit, it's like they're going to be expensive, but you just know they're going to be an awesome guitar
because they're custom shop made again, aren't they? They're not production.
Yeah, so I think they're going to be like, I think their website's like $3,700.
Wow, okay.
So
it's going to
be about $3,500.
Yeah, that's expensive.
I've been really impressed with some Schecter bits and bobs on the bass side recently as well. They've reinvigorated their Diamond series.
Yes.
With some new jazz bass and P-bass options, and even some like traditional 51 style P-bass
really?
Options, but yeah, doing some great stuff at
the
moment.
Oh, what, with two jazz bass pickups, is that right?
No, they do one with a modern precision bass pickup in it,
okay.
So a bit like the Mike Dirnt Fender is. But some really interesting stuff. They've introduced like a solid order, you know, that like really the best selling jazz bass of all time, that Squire with a maple body, maple neck, black
vintage
block
modified.
Yeah, kind of that sort of 73-ish mm-hmm. look. Was it 73 or 75?
74 jazz.
Oh, bang in between.
No, 75
yeah.
jazz.
Yeah, I think it's 75. They've kind of done something that looks a lot like that, but they've put Seymour Duncan quarter pounders in it, and you can have it active or passive. It's really good. They're making some really versatile stuff for not a lot of monies in that series. I think those ones themselves are like £700 retail, which is great for something with those sort of spec pickups and an active passive switch. Like Fender don't put active passive on their basses until you get up to the American Deluxe, and that's £1,500 plus.
I love when those companies do something a bit more trad. There's something else coming up actually in this list, which we'll get to in a bit. Which
can I interrupt on the list before the next one?
Go on. Because this is, you had some stories at the beginning of the podcast.
Well,
that you need
more,
to
yeah,
tell.
Something that is definitely news that I think everyone should be aware of, and I'm just aware that we're quite far through the podcast, and we've still got tons of things on this news list.
Go on. What's the news?
So there is
this is great radio.
This is terrible radio, isn't it?
Seriously important news.
Man flails for something on his iPhone.
I know. I was trying to find the company because I've temporarily forgotten.
Can I pip
the name
in with something
it?
I saw?
Yeah, go on. You do that whilst I look it up.
So I saw a product at NAMM that basically hit a Kickstarter. So they were like, all right, we can bring it to NAMM straight away, called the Dynamount. And it is, because Joe was talking about recording, it made me think of it earlier. You mount a microphone to it, and it goes on the front of your speaker, but it can move left and right, up and down, back and forwards, and angle the microphone, and then it's controlled via an app over Bluetooth.
What? Why
so
would you need that?
So basically, studios can have it, and the guy in the control room can have it, and he goes, oh yeah, guitar sounds well, we should need to move the mic back a bit. So rather than physically actually moving it, you can control it all remotely, so you can program in the sweet spots where the microphone needs to be depending on what kind of cab or whatever the guitarist or bassist is recording with, and they're going to be somewhere between $200 and $600 depending on which model you go for.
So it's basically for lazy studio engineers that can't be bothered to get up from the desk and go and move the mic.
Yeah, sort of like motorized faders on a mixing desk.
That's unbelievably lazy. That is so lazy. Have they hit the Kickstarter already?
Yeah, they hit the Kickstarter. They did like $500,000 on Kickstarter.
What?
So like they've already like been able to make the product and obviously take it to NAMM, and yeah, apparently studios are raving about them.
Unbelievable. Joe Branton, what's your news that you want to chime in with?
Right, I'd forgotten the name of the company and now I have remembered. There is a very, very large hire company in London called Harris Hire. They do a lot of Abbey Road's equipment. They've also done a lot of equipment for music videos and things like that. They have an amazing selection of stuff. Well, the fella, Mr. Harris, if you okay. will, is retiring.
Is that actually his name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Okay, good.
I think his name is Harry.
Harry Harris.
No, it's not. But I do have his contact details somewhere. Anyway, he's selling everything.
Okay.
In
is this an ad? Have you snuck in an ad?
I snuck in an ad. Well, no, it's not really an ad. I just think everyone get on this. I mean, go to like Harris. What do you call those? Is that a dash?
Hyphen.
Harris-hire.co.uk.
That's hard to say.
Yeah. he can't pronounce H's either because he's really Cockney.
Right, okay.
But go to harrisire.co.uk.
Up the Harris.
Yeah, exactly. And check out his gear list. It is ridiculous. So he's listed it in the year of its release.
Okay, what's the first year?
1936.
Okay, cool. What's from 36?
It's a Gibson EH-150 lap steel.
Cool.
With a Charlie Christian pickup.
Yep. Same pickup John Lennon
and used. That's £950. The prices on everything on here is pretty good. Jimmy Wheelwright, the bassist in, I found out this through Jimmy Wheelwright, the bassist from Tiger Cub, went up there the other day and picked up a 1966 P bass.
How much?
For £1,500.
Wow, that is cheap.
Refin.
Okay, still good.
Great price. So
any other P basses?
There are a couple of other P bases, but they're obviously in better condition because they cost a little bit more. But there is some amazing stuff on here, some amazing like Burns Vista Sonic stuff from the early 60s. There is actually a super baseman on there, okay. A 135 for £750. But there is some crazy stuff. There's a proper actual Mellotron on there for $5,000. There are things like stuff that is ridiculous. I'm trying to find something ridiculous. Things like a 1967 Gibson Hummingbird. They actually have a Gibson EB2 as well in candy apple red for $2,000. Loads of like 60s SGs and a few Slingerland drum kits for any drummers up there. Some WEM stuff. Watkins copycats. They've got some of those.
The best bit about all of this is you're on 10% commission for this 5-minute long advert that you've just made.
This is a really long advert. Oh, there's a Rickenbacker 4000 bass in black for £1,750.
That's the one that I... that's the one that I sold for £600.
Oh, really?
Not
is
that
it
one.
It's 1973.
They've got a 1968 all Rosewood Telecaster prototype.
Yeah, one of George Harrison's ones, yeah.
How much is that?
1800, I think.
What?
18,000, sorry.
I was going to say.
Anyway. You know the story behind this guy? This guy is who was the custodian of the Peter Green Gary Moore 59 Les Paul.
Oh, really?
So Melvin Franks basically owned it, but he looked after it. And then obviously when Melvin Franks sold it to Kirk Hammett recently. But he's the guy. He's like the main Les Paul guy. He's owned loads of 59s. He's looked after loads of 59s. He's like one of the main kind of people out there on the history of sort of old Les Pauls as well.
Oh, amazing. I didn't know that. But yeah, I mean, really anyone, you know, jump on there and grab a deal because there's some amazing equipment on there and there's, you know, it's going to be hard to find this amount of stuff in one place.
You are actually on a commission, aren't you?
I'm not.
You are.
No, I'm just probably going to buy some stuff from him. I'm probably going to buy the basement for £750. I might. There are some weird things though. There's a Burns Vistasonic bass on there, 1963.
Yeah.
Vistasonic bass for £1,500.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot, isn't it? Because in the Baker Street, the Brighton Baker Street guitar shop at the moment, there is a 60s Burns Vistasonic bass for £500.
How much are they paying for this ad?
Oh, yeah.
So he sounds like he's got a lot of good gear, but does he have the Eden glow plug?
Oh, God. What?
One of those. It's not a classic now, Joe, but it could be.
A glow plug.
Announced at Summer NAMM, the Eden glow plug. Okay, so
is this something to make bass players feel better whilst they're playing?
Yeah, it's a glow.
To stop them from following through? They hit the brown note? Or?
Yeah, weird. It's actually glow hug. It's just when you're feeling a bit better, you. Right. So, the Eden butt plug. What it is a... I think it's a 12AX7. It's essentially a valve preamp.
I'm not putting glass anywhere.
No. It's essentially a valve preamp with a crossover, so you can choose which frequencies are going through the glow plug. And
this is ridiculous.
Yeah,
is this a product?
It's just basically a valve front end.
This is because Marshall have bought Eden, and now Eden come up with stupid ideas as well as Marshall coming up with stupid ideas.
No, it looks all right. Matt, have you got a picture of it up there? Have you got some?
I have.
What is the point?
I think that says it all.
Give up.
No,
there's loads of other products like it. So it has its uses, definitely. And I suppose the thing is with bass players, if you're generally going into an amp that, to be honest, most of the time is going to be solid state, yeah, it makes a difference to have some sort of valve preamp.
The thing is,
it just doesn't look very good. It doesn't look very professional. I think that's my problem with it.
The thing is, I'm a bass player. I don't know if you know that, but the last thing I want is valve warmth in my bass sound. I don't want that at all.
But that is because you're an idiot. No, except that 99% of people do want valve warmth, but then 99% of people are smart enough to buy valve amps.
Well, but also at the same time, you know, Orange are now doing that AD, not AD series, what
no,
they called?
No, the OB1. The
OB1 series.
The OB1 300 and 500.
Not valve.
No, true.
There's so much cool bass stuff.
Aguila Tone Hammer as well. Like, yes, these are all great examples.
Sans Amp, don't need valve.
Counts less, but yeah, it's true. There are
the new Boss pedal that you rave about. Not really good preamp, no valve inside.
Yeah, true. I mean, there are some good stuff. There are some good things out there without valves. Now, I agree with that.
It just seems like a very strange product. I tell you what isn't strange and is super cool. Guild, yeah, that's right. They're back in the game.
I can't believe they're back. Who's bought them?
I don't know. I think they might be independent now, Matt.
I actually don't know.
Okay. Two new basses, the Chris Hillman Bird Bass and the Starfire Bass 2.
Should I be excited about
you them? Bloody should be. The reason you should be excited is, so Chris Hillman is the guitarist from the bass player, sorry, from the Birds.
Right.
And so this bass is like, well, in fact, let's talk about the Starfire 2 first, because it makes more sense to do it this way around. Starfire is a hollow-bodied, like,
yeah,
335
style. We know the sort of Starfire-style thing. Of course, Fender kind of nicked it for their Coronado.
So the Starfire 2 is a brand-new take on the Starfire. Two humbucking pickups, like big, square, chunky humbuckers.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's got a bridge and a neck pickup. And it's a like semi-hollow body and comes strong with round wounds, so nice and versatile. Probably is going to sound similar to a Coronado, but they'll be a bit more I think they're going to be a bit more expensive because they're a bit more handmade.
Right.
But the Chris Hillman version is a single humbucker in the middle, comes strong with flat wounds.
Yes.
I think you'll be into it in a big, big way.
What sort of body shape on the bird?
Starfire.
So a hollow body bass with one humbucker and flat wounds on it.
Yeah.
Yes. That's amazing. Do you know what? This is good because I was going to talk about this but then decided not to.
I'm
selling everything.
Okay. Is that what's inspired? Is this another advert?
No.
Is this for your stuff this time?
Yes. I am actually selling everything except for my 50s precision bass, and I'm keeping my orange cab only because I'm buying a second orange cab, second orange 15, and I'm buying one of the Obi-Wan heads.
What about all the Yamahas and that?
I'm selling all the Yamahas. I already sold one.
Which one?
I'm selling the other two. I sold my 44, my Sunburst 44.
Okay.
I'm selling my 1979 BB-800. I'm selling my BB-714 Billy Sheehan.
Oh, the Billy Sheehan.
I'm selling the Geddy Lee that I bought, the Geddy Lee jazz bass. I'm selling the other jazz bass that I have, the sort of Bitzer jazz bass.
I don't know how these have all accumulated, but...
Yeah.
Why are you selling everything?
Because I decided that I don't want to have lots of stuff. I'm selling a couple of boxes of pedals.
What are you selling? Anything good?
Oh, what are you selling?
I don't know. I need to go through and list all the pedals. I'm not sure which ones I'll keep and which ones I'll sell.
We get first reserve though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Fine. And I'm just going to sell everything except for one bass and that.
Welcome to my world.
And the pedal. And then I'm going to... No. And then I need to buy a second bass so that I have two basses.
But you've got... I don't understand.
Because I own lots of...
2P basses, right?
This is what I was thinking. I was thinking if I own a P bass, I should own a jazz bass.
Okay.
Or I could own 2P basses. To be honest, I'm a bit...
2P basses. I mean,
well, I was thinking, have you seen the new custom shop postmodern stuff?
Oh, with a jazz neck. I saw a picture of that today, actually.
Yeah, so they look absolutely incredible. Dakota red, light relicking, closet classic.
You can selling all that stuff, you might actually be able to afford a custom shop.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I was thinking, I either get one of those or, you know, maybe I'll get something like this. I actually was looking at the Coronado a lot, but really I should just get a really good P-bass or jazz bass, and that's what I was thinking I'd do with all the money. I was thinking I might go to Limelight.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You don't like Limelight, do you?
No, I don't like relics and stuff that aren't Fender.
Right, so anyone
pointless.
Who doesn't know, Limelight are...
Pointless.
Limelight are a company owned by Classic and Cool Guitars that make Fender...
Pointless and pointless
Fender
guitars.
Copies. No, they make... The same as Nash, though. Nash do it. And,
pointless.
And everyone likes Nash.
I don't.
Well, Nash are very good and lots of people do like Nash. This is just like Nash, only made in the UK. And he'll basically do a Fender Custom Shop style bass or guitar to your specification, and it's about a grand rather than sort of 2.5. I could get one of the postmodern P bases on finance, or
so something actually good and something that will hold its value and be wicked.
Or I could go to Limelight and
spend and throw a big bag of money into a toilet and flush it.
Show him some pictures of the postmodern and be like, "Can you make this?"
I think the thing is with all of those sort of bases, builders who do other stuff, is that they are awesome and generally they're really, really well built instruments. Problem is, they just have no resale value.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a tricky thing.
Well, I mean, neither do Joe's massive collection of Yamahas.
That's true. that is probably one of the worst decisions I've made is my huge collection of unsellable Yamahas because no one wants them.
Wow.
Anyway, we've got massively off subject, but
Well, I was thinking, actually, maybe we could save the rest of this news for next week when it won't be news.
It is a lot. Yeah.
We'll do a Summer Nam part two, maybe.
Yeah.
How do we feel about that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Good.
There's some good stuff on there.
Let's wrap this one up. We've got a load of questions. We're going to go and answer those in the Patreon episode. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can sign up and help us out by donating a small amount of money. And you'll get an extra half an hour of this every week. Some people have done that already. Do you want to read this? Okay. What sort of music are we going for?
I don't think I need music. I'm just going to go for like an epic voice.
Okay.
I was just going to do that.
Okay, so these people have backed us on Patreon. And if you want to do so, patreon.com/guitar nerds.
Patreon backers: Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott, Matt Quine, Fletch Fletcher, Phil Tomset, Moog Gravett, Colin Anderson.
Thanks very much. If you want to...
You know what? In the future, I think I'm going to do it more like... I'm going to put weird inflections on it. So it'll be like... Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott, Matt Quine, Fletch Fletcher, Phil Tomset, Moog Gravett, Colin Anderson.
That wasn't in the future, was it? That was just doing the whole thing again.
Yes.
Good. Thanks for joining us. If you want to see more, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can ask us questions and stuff. You can also join us on YouTube, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, where we've smashed through the 5,000 subscriber mark and are getting closer to 6,000, which is pretty awesome. On Twitter, @GuitarNerds. On Instagram, @GuitarNerds. You can find me on the Twitter, @MarkRandom. Matt, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, @Matt_90, or find me on the Facebook forum. That's where I hang out most of the time.
Joe Branton.
You can find me on the Twitter, @Joseph_900. Also, you can check out... Actually, this isn't a plug for my band.
Don't say anything rude. I'll tell you why, because I've accidentally deleted Pro Tools from my computer. So any heavy editing is going to take me a lot longer.
Oh, you're such an idiot. Do I need to get you a copy of Pro Tools?
No, that's fine.
All right, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, you can check out, you should check out my band's Instagram. You know, don't listen to my band. I'm not asking you to do that. But I took loads of pictures of all the gear we were using last week, and there's some
really cool stuff.
Yeah. What?
What about the amps and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Other than the gear that we were taking, playing through, I've made that joke in this podcast, isn't it? Check out all the pictures of the amps. I think you can do that at oh no, it's not at. Is it at on Instagram?
Yeah, well, kind of. You just search for it.
We are Polymath, but yeah, check it out. There's loads of cool gear.
Do that. Join us next week for Summer Nam Roundup Part 2. More of this nonsense over in the Patreon episode. Thanks for listening.
Farewell. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.